This episode is brought to you by Netgear Orbi Wi-Fi 6.
I have
Current Geek!
Welcome to Current Geek, everybody, the talk show about items of interest to the geeks of the world and you. I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt. This week,
I started to do it early and I couldn't stop myself.
It's all right. It's sometimes
that's why there was a small gavel and then a big gavel.
Gavels everywhere. Wonder just when that's going to happen. And today it was early. Hey, we're doing a new idea
I
today.
Threw off the pool if somebody was betting.
Exactly. On. And why not a day like this? Because it's a day of new ideas. It's a day of a new concept. It's something we've talked about a little bit before now, and now we're going to do it. And people at home are going, what? So, Tom, do you want to tell them in a nutshell what we're doing today?
Yeah. So doing the news roundups is great. It's fun. I love going into the subreddit and seeing everything that people have submitted, but it's work. Yeah. It's hard. It's, you know, if you want to get it right and write them up well, it's a kind of a work. Mm-hmm. And I do that kind of a work for a lot of my other shows. Also, sometimes it's a stretch. Even at every 2 weeks, sometimes it's like, I guess we'll shoehorn this one in here. So what we're going to do is we're going to make those once a month, like clockwork.
Sure. A thing clock you can count on. Once a month, you're going to go, look at all the nerd news we missed this month. It's
exactly.
All the important stuff.
And that
stuff.
Way, when you're submitting your stories on subreddit, you know, like, oh, this is for the month.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then instead of the second of those newsy episodes, once a month, we'll get topic ideas from you and dig down deep in them. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we enjoy about doing our movie and TV versions of Current Geek is when we kind of riff off that into other geeky things about the genre or about life or video games or whatever.
Right.
This is basically just trying to do that. And it could be like, you know, one large duck or duck-sized horses, you know, could be along those lines. Right. That's fine. Yeah. Could be just, you know, Star Wars versus Star Trek, that kind of stuff. But we want you to send us, like, what topic do you want Scott and Tom to dig into? What geeky topic should we dig into and go deeper than we do with the newsy episodes? So email us those ideas, currentgeek@gmail.com, or you can submit them on the subreddit, just right alongside the newsy stuff at currentgeek.reddit.com. Mm-hmm. But for this first one, we thought we'd give you an example of what we're talking about. If you're still like, okay, I think I kind of get it, but here we're going to do a topic that we came up with as sort of the example topic. Scott, are we ready?
I think we are ready. And this is good, by the way, because this example today is not only a good topic, but I think it's a good example of the kind of thinking we want you to do at home if you want to contribute to this. I mean, we'll always work on our own ideas as well. But like Tom said, if you've got one, when you hear what this is, you'll go, oh, that kind of stuff. Okay, well, then your imaginations will start rolling. And you can be a part of this in a pretty meaningful way. So, yes, I am ready, Tom. I'm sitting. I'm not standing. Give it to me.
Is every genre better in space?
My answer is yes.
And the idea here isn't, should every genre be in space? We're not saying that.
Right.
We're just saying, is every genre a little better when you put it in space? Or is it, even a different way to be put it would be, can every genre work in space?
Right.
Right. Like, so we talk about Star Trek historically as a space Western, right? Mm-hmm. Wagon Train to the Stars, right. Firefly, certainly a space Western. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of thing we're talking about with this topic is what can you put in space and does that make it better?
Yeah. So when you brought this is, I want to give Tom full credit. It was actually his original idea to make this our first topic. And it really piqued my interest because I was suddenly running through my head all of the genres that you could find, like there are heist movies that are better in space, family dramas that are better in space, horror movies that are better in space, certainly Westerns, political dramas.
Space 1999.
Psychological
or
thrillers.
Lost
in space. Yeah,
like
there's
a family drama in space.
Yeah, and it also shares the space with another subgenre I would refer to like, share the space, nice. like being stranded in space. I don't know what the genre is called, but this idea of like...
Like the Castaway story.
Yes, basically the Gilligan story to refer a previous
Gilligan
episode.
In space!
Right, and Lost in Space is one of those, as well as being this family drama and dealing with all those kinds of ideas.
Well, I feel like the Netflix Lost in Space is more family drama.
Oh, for sure. And I think it's good.
And the old drama. Boston Space was more Castaway. They're both, but yeah.
Sure. They get a lot more personal in the new one, let's put it that way. And I think they do that because our sensibilities for that kind of storytelling have certainly matured, and we're better at addressing father-mother relationships with their children, or conflicts in a marriage and what that means, given that you're stranded on a planet you don't know about and stuff. And I got to thinking about things like, there's plenty of examples of noir and other things, but then I started getting stuck in a couple of ruts going, oh, Wayne, we can't do Blade Runner, because Blade Runner's they never leave the planet. They're just they're on the planet. And so I think the rule here is that it has to be in space, meaning not on Earth, can be from Earth, but you got to be exploring somewhere. You got to be in a ship someplace, or at the very least on another planet for this to apply. For this rule to work.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Because Blade Runner is a great example. Space figures in because there's the off-world colonies.
Right.
But you never go there.
Nope.
In Blade Runner.
Not even not even in 2049. They don't even poke at that.
So it doesn't count as in space.
Right.
I guess then the question is it sufficient to be on another planet and never leave that other planet? Is that in space because it's not on Earth?
I think so. Because it's not on Earth, yes. Because some space travel had to happen for our characters to be where they are, or at the very least, somebody in their lineage had to do it. Yeah, I think, yes.
It could be a story told about a civilization on another planet, and they don't have space travel, though. Would that then be in space?
Yes, because it's all relative to us and where we are.
Because we're going to be anthropocentric.
Yeah. Yes. Is that a word? Because that's great if that's a word. Anthropocentric. That's amazing. All right. I'll give you an example. Tom brought up.
Tom Von Braun.
Tom Von Braun.
No relation.
He brought up Westerns. And Westerns is a very popular trope in terms of successful stories being told in space, as well as on the ground and in the actual Old West. But you mentioned something like Firefly. Specifically, one of my favorite films is, and I just love it. And I know some people think like, why do you love that so much? It's so weird. And I don't know why I do, but I love the Serenity film based on Firefly. I love that movie.
I'm right there with you, man. I don't even think of Serenity as a movie.
I don't either.
I think of it as an extension of the Firefly universe.
Yeah. And it's done.
It's just more Firefly.
It's so well done.
And that one's called Serenity.
Correct. And I would call it classification for what I think a perfect movie is. And to me, that is a perfect movie. It just does all the things I need it to do right. It has all the characters I want. And here's the thing, little side note. I think I mentioned this when we watched our pilot of that show, but I saw Serenity first. So it was before I'd even consumed the series. I saw the movie. And even then, oh, good. See, look at this. This is a confession time. Even then, I mean, that drove me to the series, obviously. But even then, I see it as this singular, amazing movie. I've seen it 19 times, and that is a true number.
Wow.
I should go for
20. I don't
20.
Know how many I've seen it, but I've seen it quite a bit. Yeah. I don't know if it's quite 19, though. That's
19's
a lot.
That's good. I've seen it more than I've seen Star Wars, and I've seen a lot of Star Wars over my lifetime. So for whatever reason, it really sang to me, and I brought a clip from that movie that I think explains kind of the Western motif pretty well. Check it out.
This report is maybe 12 years old. Parliament buried it, and it stayed buried until a river dug it up. This is what they feared she knew. And they were right to fear. Because there's a whole universe of folk who are going to know it too. They're going to see it. Somebody has to speak for these people. Y'all got on this boat for different reasons. But y'all come to the same place. So now I'm asking more of you than I have before. Maybe y'all. As sure as I know anything, I know this. They will try again. Maybe on another world, maybe on this very ground swept clean. A year from now, 10, they'll swing back to the belief that they can make people better. And I do not hold to that. So no more running. I aim to misbehave.
All right. An amazing scene.
I know. And I just want to cheer. I am to misbehave.
It makes me want to watch it again. But here's the thing about that movie and that entire, you know, everything about Firefly and the movie Serenity. It really leans into literal Western tropes. It makes this crew.
They all got on this boat for different reasons.
Right. The language of that movie even has always, and the show has always been, it's always been this oldie timey thing mixed with interesting future accents, including Chinese words thrown in and all this stuff.
A little bit of future talk, a little bit of Mandarin.
Right. A little bit of Mandarin. And then a whole lot of good old fashioned, you know, I aim to misbehave, which is not.
I don't hold with that.
Yeah. I don't hold with that. Like this kind of phrasing is just so addictive to me. I love Westerns in general, and I love anytime anyone takes a Western theme or builds a movie around the idea of it being a Western but does something else. And you could argue
it's a little less than Deadwood in its rhetoric,
yeah,
the way Deadwood was almost Shakespearean,
sure,
but it's in space.
It is, and that's what there's something about that juxtaposition that makes it special and unique. And you can find other examples, and
you would never want to put Mandarin in Deadwood. Wouldn't make any sense. In fact, you do have Mandarin in Deadwood, right? Because you have Wu, the character, but no one understands him when he speaks Mandarin.
Because
that's period appropriate. In Firefly, you can do, because it's in space, suddenly it's like, well, it's in the future. Now we can do more things, and we can stretch the boundaries, and we can make the genre more interesting.
Yeah, and they absolutely do that. And you're right about, I would agree with your point about Star Trek being Wagon Train. And it's kind of a classic Western in a way, or that's where it sort of adheres to.
And that's the way Roddenberry pitched
it.
He's like, what if it was Wagon Train, but to the stars?
Right. And that's the other thing that makes this so great, because telling a room full of, you know, stuffed up, suit wearing, cigar smoking executives back in the 60s, trying to sell them on this idea, that's the perfect way to do it. These guys are raised on Westerns. They understand them. They understand John Ford films. They understand what
Western
it means.
Western was the adult genre. Mm-hmm. Space was the kiddie genre at the time.
Yep. And then he figured out a way to mix them. So I think he's a good example. And I think you can find pieces of this in just about every popular science fiction space travel film. If there is a group of people or even just a lone hero, there's a little Western in all of it. There's certainly a little Western in The Expanse from a TV perspective. There's a little bit of Western in everything.
It's not nearly as pronounced.
Sure.
But just the idea of colonization, living on the frontier, like that just kind of, you can't avoid it when you're dealing with those kind of themes.
Right. And I would argue, you know, Battlestar Galactica, the reimagining, and even the old one, those are, you know, people who have been kicked out of their town and are on their way to find a better place. And they're being dogged in the wilderness and being dogged by nature and by man and by other dangers and awful things. Like, those themes really do translate well to space. And I love it. So great example.
Because there's something about space that recaptures what was special about the Western. Mm-hmm. Because the Western became popular in the early 20th century, I think even maybe in the late 19th, but certainly in the early 20th century, we're losing this sense of adventure, but let's recapture it in story.
Right.
There once was a time when if you weren't native to the territory, you looked out on this vast wilderness and saw, you know, a chance to start again, to get lost in it. To adventure, to find out what was there, to have no boundaries. And space is our modern version of that. That's real. Mm-hmm. We can't quite get there yet. We could just barely touch the moon. But because we touched the moon, we kind of feel like, well, maybe we could go to Mars. Maybe we could go beyond.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we're, as a species, back in that position of, there really is no boundary. There's, you know, there's new room for adventures and starting again. And that idea of the West, that the Western, which, don't get me wrong, history was much different than the ideal of the Western, but the ideal was, you know, captured people's imagination in the same positive aspects of it that captured people's imagination, capture people's imagination about space.
Yeah. And it's a very strong way to tell a story because people can relate to it and they get excited about it. And it does inspire a sense of discovery. I mean, there's a reason why Kirk and Picard every week told you that it was the final frontier. Well, that's kind of how it's seen. We've explored everything here. We've seen it all. We know what's up. We know what's underneath. We know everything. Maybe we don't know the lowest depths of the ocean. And that's another exciting subgenre of science fiction, by the way.
Yeah, right.
But space continues to be and will always be, given its infinite, just a giant unexplored canyon that you would love to go see and stake your claim in. And that just makes for great stories.
Oh, man, that's such a good point. Because even if you can't get there, you can always see across the canyon.
Yeah, you can always see it. Maybe
someday we'll figure out how to get there.
Exactly. You may not. It might be your kid. Maybe their kids. Yeah. Maybe their kids. But you just know one day someone's going to reach out and get that far. And I thought about some other movies, like they're a little harder to put into a pigeonhole, but you know, things like that Jodie Foster movie. I forgot the name. The one where she gets in like a space phone booth and just like shoots way out into the future. Contact. Jeez Louise. That's a good example of just how far can we go or do we want to go? Is that Crichton novel? I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking about my second. So Western's my favorite applied template in space.
And the one that's, like you say, it's been done the most, the earliest, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think it will continue to be a really strong place.
I guess earliest was the adventure story, right?
Right.
The sort of like Captain Fantastic and his magic spaceship kind of stuff.
But, right. Yeah. I know I talk incessantly about it, but Mad Max Fury Road in its purest form is another Western template applied to a different time. Mm-hmm. And I just think it works kind of across the board. Space is a great place for it. But my second favorite genre that I like in space as applied to those stories in space is horror. I love a good scary thing in space kind of movie. And it can be anything from, you know,
Alien.
Alien, of course.
Or Aliens. Is the classic space horror.
Right.
That wasn't the first, but it was I think it was the first one people took seriously.
I agree.
Where you realize that you could tell a story in space that was more horrifying because space is dangerous.
Right. And it's also very lonely out there and it's also very isolating. Yeah. And there's something about being in the middle of nowhere, knowing that you're millions, potentially millions of light years away from anything. And it's just you and your wits. And that's what that movie is. It comes down to, in the end, Sigourney Weaver and that alien. And that's it. Actually, here's a clip I have where Sigourney Weaver's character is talking to Ash, who they did not know was a android until later, a synthetic. But now they have a conversation before he is finally put to rest. Here you go.
Ash, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
What was your special order?
You read it. I thought it was clear.
What was it?
Bring back life form. Priority one. All other priorities rescinded.
There's a damn company. What about our lives, you son of a bitch?
I repeat, all other priorities are rescinded.
I love that scene. It's great because you get to watch Frodo.
Not the most horrifying.
No, but it's very unsettling
in the classic sense.
Right.
But it's a great scene.
It's very unsettling. He's all ripped apart. His blood is white milk ish looking stuff. It's, you know, oozing out of the corner of his mouth. It's Ian Holm, for heaven's sakes, freaking Frodo Baggins, just sitting there with his head cut off after he's destroyed. And then it's, you know, speaking after she hooks him up and kind of hot wires him. And it just, that thing left me, you know, with both nightmares and imagination stuff when I was a kid. I remember just going, man, that movie, freaking Alien. Wow, that was so cool. And again, up till then, I know there are other examples, surely, in history of films we could go look at. But up till then, that was really unique. It's like, whoa, like a legitimate scary adult horror movie in space.
Yeah. The thing you always talk about with Alien when they teach it in film class is, you never saw the alien.
Right.
Right. And that kept it scarier.
Yeah.
And when you did. That is a classic horror film trope. You don't show, you know, except for the 15 sequels, but you don't show the threat until later.
Right.
Because that takes away some of the horror. It's more horrifying when you don't know what's there. And even then, even, you know, a lot of times in horror, you put a mask, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've got Jason. Mm-hmm. And so with Alien, they basically did the same thing. They're like, we're not going to show you it, but when we do get to show you it, it's going to be all horrifying as hell.
Right. And your imagination is going to make it way worse, because when you do see parts of him, it will be in a cold, dank undercarriage of the ship. And it'll be the guy you knew was going to die next will be down there. And that thing will come out of the creepy shadows and only see the bending of a limb of some sort, and maybe the teeth beginning to get bared, and then a second set of teeth coming out of those. But you don't really have an idea of what the hole is, right? You just know.
Right. You just get pieces.
Yeah. And that's so it's so well done. It's an incredible film. I hope that's on our top 200. I don't know if it is, but.
I think Aliens is.
Is it? Okay. Well, that one's great too. It's more of the adventure movie, but I
don't know why I say it like that. I just want to make sure people know I'm saying the second one.
Aliens. I like it. Also, I will go on record. I don't care how much people want to give me crap for this. I like most, I won't say all, but most of the Alien movies. I like 3, despite some, I have major problems with it. Don't get me wrong, but I like space prisons. That's another genre I like in space. And that's what 3 is.
Well, jail story is kind of a genre, right?
It really is. And I like 4 for some of what it does. Everything past that is just throwaway. But
What about the prequels?
I like where they want to go. I just don't know that they're executed all that well. And it bums me out because Ridley Scott's amazing. And his, you know, he made the original film and some of my favorite, most influential movies of all time. And yet he just couldn't nail Prometheus or Covenant. And I don't know why. But the other movie I wanted to give props to in the horror department is Event Horizon. That was the one I couldn't remember earlier. And that movie, dude, just ripped me a new one. I couldn't believe that after all that time between Alien and It, that one finally got my goat in 97 or whatever it was. And still to this day, just haunts me.
I didn't know what I was getting into when I went to see that movie.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen trailers or anything. I used to do this when I lived in Austin. I'd go to movies with friends and they would pick. And I would just be like, yeah, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's see it. I would do the Jeff Cannata thing without realizing it of going in fresh. And that movie threw me. Yeah. I had no idea what I was getting into.
It's really something. There was a scene in there where, I almost said Vince Neil, Sam Neil, who's in that movie, gets all crusty skinned and his eyes are blind. And there's just a brief moment where you sort of see light flash past him when he's in this state. And I forget even the reason he's got it, but basically this ship has figured out a way to breach the boundaries of hell is the idea. And it turns into a Clive Barker novel kind of, and man, it's good at doing that. And I don't even know that director, Paul Anderson, not Paul Thomas Anderson, but a different Anderson, Paul Anderson. He went on to do a whole bunch of other movies and none of them very good. They're all kind of poop, but this was something, man. It was great. Yeah. And
had one good one in him.
I guess that happens. Now, how about heists? Do you have a favorite heist? Like the subgenre of heist films. Do you have one that you look
What's
at?
What's an example of a heist in space?
I'll give you one. In fact, I'll play it. Let's see if you can figure it out from the clip. You'll know this immediately. Here you go.
You're a hard man to find, Galen. But farm it. Really? Man of your talents?
It's a peaceful life.
Lonely, I imagine.
Since Leo died, yes.
Oh. Oh. My condolences.
Search the house!
All right, that is... Oh, do you know? I should ask you if you know what that is.
No, I don't.
It's an obscure-ish scene in it, and I did that on purpose because I knew it would be the only way to stump you. I couldn't have the music that you know all the time. I couldn't have any of the sounds that would have given it away. So this was a little bit of a cheat to have me try to fool you, but I don't blame you because I wouldn't have gotten it either. Anyway, it is Star Wars Rogue One. And I love Rogue One.
I've only seen it once.
I liked Rogue One a lot. I know there's a lot of split opinion on Rogue One.
It is a heist in space. You're right.
It is. And
I guess the heist doesn't happen in space, but it's a space movie with a heist.
Correct. Yeah. And they adhere to the, you know, ragtag group of very different people they need to make the heist work, which, you know, totally sticks to that old template in films where, you know, a heist has got a crazy computer hacker guy.
Yeah, that was director Krennic and Galen.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'd love that. And, you know, we could, if we pointed to, like, Mandalorian dabbles in almost all the tropes we're talking about at least once in their season, that first season. There's a heist episode.
There's
all sorts of Western tropes in that thing. But I like that idea of oddball, ragtag people having to work together for a common goal, whether it's to steal something or...
I mean, in that respect, and I know it's still Star Wars, but A New Hope,
yeah,
has a heist element.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
They don't mean to get on the Death Star, but they kind of have to, you know, figure it out and get off.
Right.
They're heisting Princess Leia, like, which is a little weird, but it's a prison break episode.
Yeah, there you go. They have to get out of prison. Some of them get in and then have to get out again. Star Wars, if anything, Star Wars is the most jack of all trades of the films I was thinking of, just Star Wars in general, because they do play with a lot of it. There's like Arthurian lore stuff happening. And
I mean, I'm sure we'll get to fantasy, space fantasy is most emblem. The biggest space fantasy is Star Wars.
Right. And the one,
cause you've got magic with the Force, you've got sword fighting, like you have so many fantasy tropes in it.
Yeah. Plus you have the old reliable saga sort of genre, like
the idea
of this big multifaceted multi-episode arc that you have to follow. They're perhaps the greatest use, you know, it's the greatest use in science fiction probably of that sort of thing. And so Star Wars are kind of across the board. In fact, I had to really think about heist because I don't think there are enough movies in science fiction or in space that focus on that. They may have an element of it, like Episode 4 certainly has an element of it. But
like you say, The Expanse, there are heists in it.
Right.
But it's not a heist show.
Right. And I love space pirates. I love the idea of roaming, you know, especially like I love the Reavers in Serenity. It's another thing in Serenity I love. Mm-hmm. But just like awful band of roughnecks who fly around space and just want to take your cargo, and there's something about that that I love. So I'm going to go ahead and
You've got a couple of heist episodes of Firefly too.
Right.
You've got the great train robbery. Mm-hmm. And then you have, I can't remember the name off the top of my head now, but the one where they go and try to get River scanned.
Yep. Very heisty.
In that case, they're just stealing information. But they have to break in. It's got a heist layout of like, here's the plan, here's when it has to happen, and of course everything goes to hell. Mm-hmm. And they still have to figure out how to improvise and get out of it. Just it's a very typical heist movie type plot.
And Hollywood loves, you know, the scoundrel turned good guy, or the scoundrel who feels compelled to do the right thing. Han Solo is a great example of that, but there are many in Star Wars.
Or the occasional Jane,
sure,
who is a scoundrel who does the wrong thing and betrays
right.
Shut out in
Jane,
an airlock.
Jane is complicated. He's a complicated
man
character.
They call Jane.
Yeah, he's rough. But I love when they can pull that off and it feels right.
There's not enough space heists.
Yeah, I agree.
We need a good space heist movie where it's like, we've got this, this cruise liner full of vacationers traveling between the planets. Mm-hmm. It's got loads of jewels. We're going to break in without people knowing it. Here's how we get in through this airlock. That'd be great.
You could kind of argue, although I don't think it's quite what you're asking for, and I agree with you, that's what I would want. But I think Fifth Element does a bit of that as well. In fact, they literally have the cruise liner.
There's an element of that.
Element in there. They're all after that Fifth Element. And, that's a fun part of that movie. I just wish, I love that movie, but so I shouldn't give it a hard time, but it's a lot of mixed stuff in there. They don't have one big focus, but yeah, more heist movies in space. I'm down, especially pirates, man. Hey, you guys, time to talk about our good buddies at Netgear. We love Netgear. Yes, Netgear. Hey, how old is your Wi-Fi feeling these days? Does it buffer all the time when you're trying to stream stuff? Does connecting new devices to it slow it down? Can it handle all the gaming video calls and large files you're throwing at it? And what happens when you try to do all that stuff at once? Oh, man! No good comes from that. It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is. If your Wi-Fi router is old and outdated, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi will feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all your devices anywhere in your home. Stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering, eliminate lag while gaming, and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class, you know, like on a plane. It's very comfortable. Lay back, put your feet up. If you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it today from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. That's netgear.com/best Wi-Fi. And we thank them for supporting this show.
Forget the Caribbean. Yeah. Let's do Pirates of the Orion.
There you go. All right, here's an idea of, you know, we talk about the fantastical. A lot of these things we're talking about involve aliens and laser swords and things like that. This one's a little more grounded, but it's the idea of being stuck on an island. And here's
another. The Castaway.
Yeah, yes. The Castaway. There you go. The Castaway subgenre. And in this case, it's the Martian.
Robinson Crusoe.
The Martian.
What the hell is Project Elrond?
I had to make something up.
Yeah, but Elrond?
Because it's a secret meeting.
How do you know that? Why does Elrond mean secret meeting?
The Council of Elrond is from Lord of the Rings. It's the meeting where they
decide to destroy the One Ring.
We're going to call something Project Elrond. I would like my code name to be Glorfindel.
I hate every one of you.
Well, Teddy doesn't even know about this yet.
I'm sorry, who are you?
This is Rich Parnell, Astrodynamics. Tell him what you just told me.
I can get the Hermes back to Mars by Sol 561.
All right. There's a lot to unpack there, but the Martian's great at, stranded. What do we do now? Kind of story. And I also love that reference to the Lord of the Rings happened while, you know, Boromir's in the room. Like literally the actor played Boromir's in that movie. But anyway, it's another one of my favorites. And you could say The Martian. You could say, there's so many lost in space. But this concept of just being stuck out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's also a rescue story. Like right. That clip made me realize that it's not just the Castaway story. And this is true of many Castaway stories. There's also a rescue element, and The Martian gives you the rescuer side of it. Like, how do we rescue this person?
That's a good point. Are there less?
You get the Castaway part, but you also get the rescue 911 part.
Yeah, I didn't think about that because, like, in the film with the same name, Castaway, the Tom Hanks movie, not a space movie, but there's no element of rescue. He gets himself out of there. They find him because he's out floating in the ocean. But nobody was actively looking for him anymore. They had presumed him dead and all the stuff lost. So I would like more of that in movies. I mean, The Martian was more realistic in the way that they approached that sort of thing. Because if you had an important NASA project happen and then it went this wrong and you need to get your man back, you would have all these people back in Houston and China and everywhere else that was working on it, you know, freaking out and trying to figure out the best way to get Matt Damon back.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen that in real life with Apollo 13, right? That was a true story.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's another good one. That one counts, I think, by the way. Don't you think it counts? I think it counts.
Which one?
Apollo 13. Totally counts.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's a rescue story.
Yeah. All right.
Not a Castaway story, but it's a rescue story.
All right. I found another one. The film Sunshine, underrated in my opinion. I love that movie. Danny Boyle film from some years ago. Really, really great. And the concept there is they had to put together a special crew and ship to fly to the moon or near it. Not the moon, sun, sorry. That's why it's called Sunshine. They got to fly near the sun, and then they got to deploy something that will basically kickstart the sun again because the sun is burning out. And because it's burning out, the Earth is just freezing rapidly. You know, the tropics are gone. Everything's just going to freeze over and be done. And so they go on this mission. It's a one-way mission. They know that. The goal here is to restart the sun, which will then save the planet and save the solar system. And it's stuff that happens along the way where things get really interesting. But it's this rush against the clock, race against the clock kind of thing that I think works extremely well in space. Because again, like you said earlier, the dangers of space are freaking scary, man. Like, you go outside the airlock, you're gonna die.
You know what? I'm gonna add a genre here that I think this qualifies under, which is suspense.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, it's definitely suspense because it's got that race against the clock thing. It's got that stuff's going wrong in the last minute, and we've got to figure a way around this. I can't think of his name all of a sudden, but dude that plays Captain America, I can't think of his name.
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans. He's in this, and boy, the way he goes. You got to see Sunshine if you haven't seen it. It's fantastic. Great movie. And anyway, I have a clip from it. This is one of the characters talking to the computer as he's getting ready to view what the sun looks like up close for the first time.
Hey, Chris.
Yes, Dr. Searle.
Please refilter the observation room portal.
Filter up or down, Dr. Searle?
Down. How close is this to full brightness?
At this distance of 36 million miles, you are observing the sun at 2% of full brightness.
2%? Can you show me 4%?
And then she later says, no, it'll kill you, so we can't we can't do 4.
Spoiler.
Yeah. He can do 3.1% for 30 seconds, is how that turns out. Man, that's a good movie. Have you seen Sunshine?
I haven't seen Sunshine. I definitely want to see it now.
That's so good. I love Sunshine. It holds up. It looks great. It's just this killer idea. It's so science fiction-y. It's got a bunch of actors in it. You're going to just know them all immediately. In fact, I didn't realize this, but the guy who plays the Chinese space expert in The Martian, Victor Wong, this is the actor. He's also in Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
He's awesome. He's in this movie as well. So the guy who's in Doctor Strange and Captain America are both in this movie, but it's all before. I want to say this was like 2010 or 08 or something like that. So it was a little bit before Avengers and all that stuff, but it's so good. Oh man. I love Sunshine so much. It's one of my favorite movies, and it really nails that.
Moon, Duncan Jones movie.
Right, is another one. I forgot about Moon.
That count, even though it's not necessarily like it's not a rescue one.
No.
But it's solitary. It's a castaway, even though it's intentional castaway, right? He's just there on a 3-year mission.
It's like a story of, what do they call that when you're stuck in a place and you start getting stir crazy? I guess stir crazy is the word. It's one of those. It's like you've been by yourself too long. It's a study in, can humans handle being on their own, and all he has is this AI. You know, that talks to him, and is he seeing things, or are things really going bad? Is he discovering the horrible secret that's been going on the moon, or is it just him because he's sweaty and had it? Yeah, that's a great one. In fact, the other one I would put in that category is a little film called Pandora. I don't know if you ever saw that, but I'm gonna play a clip from it. It has Dennis Quaid in it, a few other actors I really like. Here's the scene.
It seems my mild memory lapse is finally worn off, Lieutenant. Who the hell are you?
Gallo, Corporal. I was younger than you when I first came on board. Funny, I can't even remember what life was like before this flight began. It's all I have.
You were the one who received the final transmission. You stayed awake, you broke the rotation, you killed your crew.
How the hell did you know that?
Where are we?
So good. That's a good movie.
It reminds me somehow of Ad Astra.
A little bit. Yeah, I can see that.
At the end, anyway, when they have the confrontation with the dad.
There is an element of that. That's true.
Ad Astra.
This was actually produced by, so that was Ben Foster you're hearing, but this was, let's see, the film was directed by Christian Alvart and produced by Robert Kultzer, Jeremy Bolt, and Paul W.S. Anderson.
Not Wes Anderson.
No, it's the other one that did the one I liked.
Very different. Wes Anderson is his own genre, and I definitely want to see Wes Anderson.
Oh man, don't even suggest such a cool idea. That's so good,
isn't it?
I mean, he pauses to do weird animation stuff now and again. Can he just do one as a science fiction thing?
Oh, someday.
Holy crap!
Keep my fingers crossed.
That just makes me want like that Steve Zissou one in space. Like just doing a Wes Anderson movie that's already done in space. That's so great. That's a great idea, Tom. Oh my gosh. I just watched that French Dispatch trailer for his new movie.
Yeah.
It's like the most Wes Anderson thing. Himself. Oh, yeah. Big time. The minute you see it, you go, oh my gosh, did Wes Anderson explode on the set? And they just kept
What if Wes Anderson made a Wes Anderson film?
In space. That would be
in space.
Unbelievably cool. You've really got my imagination with that. That's awesome. All right. Do you think comedy works in space? Let's talk about that.
Oh yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. I would call it satire more often than comedy. I feel like in space for some reason, that's how it works out. But Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, maybe not the movie for everyone, but certainly the book.
Yeah. I like the movie.
Works in like, it absolutely works in space. Doctor Who has an element of comedy in space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could argue.
I'm fully on board for space comedy.
Galaxy Quest is another great example of that. Ah,
yeah. Another great one.
And that's a little meta, you know, that one's a meta sort of Star Trek-y thing anyway. Well, how about this one right here?
Princess Vespa spaceship within range, sir.
Good. Fire a warning shot across her nose.
What's going on?
It's either the 4th of July or someone's trying to kill us.
Careful, you idiot. I said across her nose, not up it.
Sorry, sir. Doing my best.
Who made that man a gunner?
I did, sir. He's my cousin.
Who is he?
He's an asshole, sir.
I know that. What's his name?
That is his name, sir. Asshole. Major Asshole.
And his cousin?
He's an asshole too, sir. Gunner's mate, first class, Philip Asshole.
How many assholes we got on this ship anyhow?
Yo!
All right, so Spaceballs is pretty, you know, cornball, but it counts.
Oh, yeah. It was hilarious when I was young and watching it.
Yeah.
I still enjoy it. It's super corny these days, but it's a classic. Yeah. Cannot deny.
Yep, for sure. And I think I could use a little more comedy in space. You know, maybe it mixes well with other aspects, and that's the best stuff. Like Guardians of the Galaxy is pretty often funny, right? Like there's a lot of jokes
and
in there.
Comedy in space.
Right. Comedy in space totally works. Again, proving our
point. By the way, I just have to play this because it's on my soundboard.
All right, go for
Ludicrous
it.
Ludicrous speed.
I like Spaceballs. It's so dumb, but I like it.
Yeah.
It's dumb. All right. How about romance? You like romance in space?
Romance is one I've had a hard time with in space.
Yeah.
Because I want romance to be an element of my story, but not the entire story. That's just me. I'm not trying to bag on romance here. This is a personal thing.
Right.
What are examples of space romance where it's just the romance? We're not talking about Attack of the Clones, where, you know, where there's a romance in the middle of the space movie.
Well, and see, this might be our one crack in the ship, because I think that it can work, but nobody's brave enough to go full romantic.
I mean, I guess Interstellar kind of counts.
Sort of, but it's more
but
like
there's more to it, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And there, like the example I pulled in the clip I have is from Passengers. And my problem with Passengers was that it actually was starting to lean in quite well to the idea that these two were meant to be, that there was a romance there and that. But then it had to do, it felt like, because it didn't have the confidence to finish it this way, it felt like it had to do something drastic, which was, oh no, he shouldn't have pulled her out of life support. He's basically signed her death warrant, and they turned all on its head and make it seem super, you know, devious. And I think that was a mistake. Like they should have leaned into this, we're here together, we're in this together, we're going to survive this together. Like they just kind of blew that, and it's unfortunate, but here's a scene before that gets blown, and it's a decent scene.
Happy birthday, dear Aurora. Happy birthday to you.
I should mention those are droids. I'll keep going here.
A birthday drink for the birthday girl.
Aren't you going to ask for my ID? I might not be old enough to drink.
Oh, I would never ask your age in front of a gentleman.
Jim's no gentleman. Anyway, there's no secrets between me and Jim.
Is that so?
You heard the lady.
I will be right back.
All right, so this is when it went bad, because then Chris Pratt, you know, had all kinds of secrets. And and then it just, I don't know. See, that undermined the idea that you could do romance in space.
There are space romance books.
Yeah.
Silver Shark, Ilona Andrews, Left Hand of Darkness, actually. Ursula K. Le Guin, I think, counts. Dragonflight by Anne McKay. But I don't think that translates out into movies. Mm. And I wonder if that's just a prejudice of the movie making industry.
Right.
Because think about it. Like, most romances are rom-coms.
Mm-hmm.
They're romantic comedies. There are like straight on romances too. I mean, then there's genre romances like Outlander, mm-hmm. Time Traveler's Wife.
Sure.
But they're never in space.
No. Maybe if they go a full, well, okay, so I haven't seen it yet, but that new show on HBO, and I forgot the name of it, but it's basically a cruise and a space cruiser.
That's a comedy.
Yeah, it's a pure comedy, right?
About Avenue 5.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I haven't seen it yet, so I don't have any reference for this.
I've been watching it. It's slapstick almost.
And is it funny? I mean, are you like entertained?
Yeah, well, whether it's funny or not is a whole different story. It's meant to be funny,
though. Okay. All right. So maybe that's working.
I'm finding it funnier as I go along, but it's kind of a dumb comedy.
Okay.
In space.
Right. So I wonder if they, I guess what I was getting at is if the romance angle went more comedy, like you tried to make a funny romantic comedy, basically a romantic comedy
in
space.
Start by making a rom-com in space.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. And I don't know.
And again, lots of books. Lots of books in this genre.
Sure.
Romance in space. Not a lot of movies or TV shows. So it definitely happens.
It feels like maybe
this
people
might be the first one where it doesn't feel like it's stronger in space yet.
Maybe you can't stretch the imagination far enough to say you need romance or things that are, you know, affairs of the heart need to feel more grounded and can't have a bunch of fakery around.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, one of the things about romance is, will they be together or can't they? And what better place to get separated than space?
Yeah. But they can get away with it in fantasy more. I don't know why that is. You know,
I think only because they've done it.
I guess so. Maybe nobody's
this is a challenge to the audience. There create space romance.
There you go. Make it happen. All right. The last one I thought of was political drama. And the example I used jumped out at me because it seemed like the most politically, and there's other examples, but it seemed very politically charged. Let's see if you can find out what it is. Here you go.
If you want to share this world with them, you need to understand them.
I'd say we understand them just fine, thanks to Jake here. Hey, Doc, come take a look.
They're not going to give up their home. They're not going to make a deal. For a light beer? Blue jeans. There's nothing that we have that they want. Everything they sent me out here to do is a waste of time. They're never gonna leave home tree.
They're never gonna leave home tree, Tom. Do you remember?
Oh, no. I see you, Scott.
Yeah, Avatar is the movie. But
not the Navi.
And there's a lot in there that's like adventure and all this other stuff, but it's also very, it's a very political idea of taking somebody else's land, you know.
It dances with wolves in space.
Yeah, basically. I like that movie more than I'm supposed to.
You know what? That's my secret. I won't even say shame. I just don't say it because I know people shoot arrows at me, but I actually like watching Avatar.
It's not
a perfect movie,
but
it's gorgeous.
It's still the second most money-making film of all time and was only unseated last
great
year.
Great performances in it, too.
It does. I think it's all about execution. Because I'm not going to lie and say that it's an incredibly complex story. It's not. It's been done a thousand times before.
Well, it's pretty.
It's good. So, you know, I don't know what those new ones are going to be like, and I think it's weird he waited 12 years or whatever it's going to be until they're done, but There's a politically charged idea there that we are encroaching on a native space and we're taking it over because it has something we want and we're displacing them in a way that's cruel and awful. And, you know, is there anything more politically charged than that? I don't think so.
The other one that I think is kind of alongside the political drama, although I don't think Avatar is really a good example of it, is Thriller.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A thriller in space.
Yeah, there's probably a bunch of those, right? That we could point
yeah.
to.
Yeah, and honestly, a lot of times The Expanse qualifies mm-hmm. as thriller in space, I feel like.
Yeah, and thriller being, you know, there's thriller has is like the child of some suspense, some mm-hmm. some you know,
it's like
melodrama.
Spy story, Dean Koontz.
Yeah.
Maybe not Dean Koontz so much. Dean Koontz is straddles horror, but
Tom Clancy maybe.
Tom Clancy, yeah. Military, mm-hmm. military in space is huge, right?
It's like enormous in books, too.
Troopers yeah. and, you know, all the John Scalzi Old Man's War books so fall good. Into that category.
Yeah.
Plenty of military fiction in space as well. Mike Cole, Armored Saint. Actually not in space. It's fantasy. I take that back.
Oh, all right.
Even though but it's on another world. So, and there's some steampunky technology, which made me want to say it, but Mike Cole also does military space fiction though.
Yeah. And that stuff's huge in books. Like the space fiction yeah. is thick.
The one we didn't talk about was mystery.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You could, let's see, you could probably put a couple of these fit in mystery pretty well, but mm-hmm. one that is like most like pure mystery, like pure whodunit.
Mystery, yeah.
Like a whodunit in space. Let me think for a second.
Star Trek quite often
yeah.
had mystery episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially TNG.
Trying to think of something that's
especially like, the holodeck episodes that were actual mystery episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus they were literally doing a Sherlock
they
Holmes.
Were literally
stories.
Doing like, yeah. you know, noirish 30s on the holodeck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, freaking Geordi is playing.
Well, it was Patrick Stewart. It was Picard playing the hard-bitten detective.
Yeah.
And then the holodeck would go wrong. I think there were two or three of those.
Dixon Hill was the name of the
Dixon Hill. Good yeah. memory.
Well, not depends on when you're asking me, but yes.
I mean, it was good that you remembered it.
Thank you. Because your overall diagnosis was incorrect, but that one case was correct.
Also, I mean, I want to say true crime is a genre. That might be better in space, but it would have to wait for us to go to space.
Well, hey, we got Space Force now. Maybe something will go
yeah,
down.
Who yeah, who knows? But what about historical fiction?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Which is kind of, I mean, it's alternate history, but for all mankind. Totally that.
That's a good example. Sure. Oh, gosh.
But Apollo 13 is also historical fiction.
Sure. I mean, I don't think you can count it as, well, it is science fiction, but nobody leaves the planet as far as I know. But like Man in the High Castle sort of scrubs that itch as well. But yeah, it's, again, it's not in space, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. Historical fiction. I mean, alternate history, easy for all mankind. Historical fiction. Some people may quibble with Apollo 13 being called historical fiction because they're like, it's based on an actual true story. Right. Like a lot of that stuff actually happened.
Right.
So that's fair. We have to get some distance from this before we can really tell historical fiction. Feels like you need a century between you and the story you're telling for historical fiction to really work.
Well, that's interesting. So so from true historical fiction to be applied to space travel and space activities, we're going to need a little more space.
That's why we're starting to see more stories told about, you know, First Man, right? But these are usually considered biopics or based on a true story rather than historical fiction.
Right.
Historical fiction, usually, I think the delineation is not all your characters are real.
Right.
You have people that you don't know were alive in your story. And most of our space stories that are historical in nature, everybody's real. Or if they're not real, they're a combination of three real people into one, just to simplify things.
Do you count the, what, I don't remember the name of the movie. At Capricorn 1, is that the one where they faked the moon landing and
yeah, that, I don't consider that historical fiction, Scott. What are you trying to
say?
Well,
what I mean is, wouldn't you
that's alternate history, maybe.
Yeah, alternate history. Because the key with historical fiction is you have to take a historical
event.
Events
actually happen.
Right,
yeah.
right. So that doesn't quite work. Whereas all, what's the Apple TV Plus one called? I forgot.
For All Mankind.
For All Mankind is based on a moment of pivot where we didn't make it first.
Right. Everything in it is true
yeah.
up until the Soviets land on the moon first.
Right.
And then it splits from our reality. Mary Robinette Cole's stories, same kind of thing. A meteor hits the Earth in the 50s and accelerates the space program, therefore causing people to go into space earlier. And that is based on real events up until that fictional event happens, and then everything splits.
Gotcha. I'm curious now. We've got all this laid out on the table. We know what these genres are. We've discussed, you know, different versions of them in different films and TV and other kinds of fiction. Do we now still hold to this concept after all this has been said and done in the court of opinion of Tom and Scott? Is everything truly better in space? And does the bromance one mess with our assumption?
Yeah. All right. First of all, I want to give the title for the Mary Robinette Cole book. It's The Calculating Stars, first in that series.
All right.
Western, I think we made a great defense. Better is always pejorative because somebody's like, no, Westerns are better. I don't like space stories, but whatever. Do these genres work in space? Western, absolutely. Yep. Horror, absolutely. Yep. Heist is on the fence.
Yeah,
I want them to work.
Yeah.
And the examples we talked about were good, but we need more of those.
Yeah.
Space fantasy very clearly works. Rescue stories, castaway stories, yes. Suspense, absolutely. Build for it. We would love to see if Wes Anderson worked.
I would.
Please, Wes Anderson, make a space movie. Comedy, no brainer. Thriller, political drama, great. Mystery, sure, totally works.
Sure.
In space.
Yeah.
Military, yes. The two that I think, well, three. True crime doesn't work in space yet. Because we don't have any crime in space yet, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So we'll hold off on that one. But historical fiction and romance. Historical fiction, I think, just needs more time.
Mm-hmm.
Romance is the one where I think it could, but it hasn't yet.
Yeah.
Except as an element of another story, right?
Right.
There's definitely romance in space stories that work.
Sure.
But like actually having it be a romance, right?
Right.
Be a Jane Austen in space. Oh my God, I would love that so much.
Wouldn't it be great? I think it can be done.
Has somebody not done that? Am I just like, have I missed the boat?
Well, I mean, if it has been done, has it been done just so poorly we've never heard of it? Was it so small that we never saw it? Like, I don't know. Like somebody, that's why I love this concept also, because some of these questions are going to inspire a bunch of emails and they're going to all tell us, oh, you guys didn't see this.
No, we want that. We want people to go, oh, you know what? Here's one you didn't think of, or here's one that you might be unaware of.
Mm-hmm.
Send those to us because I want to hear them. There is a Jane Austen space opera series by Jolie Sue Burkhart.
Oh, all right. So there's a book form of something.
Yeah.
Not that we're discounting books, but.
Oh, Love in Space is your new Jane Austen science fiction movie from 2011.
Ooh, what?
Three unmarried sisters looking for love. The mother is talking to the daughters by vidphone because one is in Australia, one is on a movie set, and another is on Chinese space station.
That's space.
It's a Hong Kong comedy.
That's definitely space.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's any good.
I don't know.
All right. I feel pretty good about this because I know we're going to get responses, and that's what I like the most. So send us your thoughts. And remember, keep in mind something like The Time Traveler's Wife is definitely about a romance. And it's, you know, interesting drama about that, and it's science fiction, but it's not space. So
not
just
space.
Keep it in mind that we're looking for space here, because you might go, well, The Matrix, nope. They didn't have, well.
Also keep in mind that we didn't mention every movie, book, or TV show we know.
Yeah.
So just because we didn't mention it doesn't mean we missed it or left it out on purpose.
Right.
So you know, just keep that in mind when you're making your suggestions, but we want to hear them, definitely.
We also leaned heavily into film and TV because we can do media from that. It's harder to do that with books, but obviously there are going to be tons of books that go lots of different directions. We'd love to hear your recommendations.
Gideon the Ninth is the book we're reading this month for Sword and Laser, which is bone magic goth sword fighters.
Whoa.
In space.
Wow. Really?
It's amazing.
That actually sounds kind of great.
It's pretty great.
Check that out. All right. Well, there you go. Use everything we've said today as recommendations as well. And let us know your favorites. All right, Tom, before we get out of here, a reminder that next week is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. It's a film festival film we're doing. This is the old one, 1966. And by old one, I just mean there's lots of movies that try to riff on this name, but we're looking at the original here.
Yep.
And we're excited about it. I am. I haven't seen this in ages, so I'm ready. Speaking of Westerns. Yeah, exactly, right? Let's get in there. Give me a fistful of dollars and
a few dollars more.
Let me see the outlaw Josie Wales walking around, or however all that went. But I'm excited about that. So that's next week right here at Current Geek. So be here for that. Also a reminder that we are supported by you fine folks at home at patreon.com/currentgeek. Go over there and check it out. I just put out this month's artwork and it turned out really good. I'm very happy with it and proud of it. If you're like, what the heck is that? Go read more about it at patreon.com/currentgeek. All right, before we go, Tom, anything in your world we should mention before we go?
Yeah, if you like space books about time travel, I've got one coming out. It's the second in the Pilot X series. It's called Trigger, T-R-I-G-O-R, and it's coming out March 24th. The continuing adventures of Pilot X and his time ship, Verity. You can get it right now, inkshares.com/books/Trigor. Just search for Trigor if you can't find it, T-R-I-G-O-R. That is the place to pre-order it before it comes out to everybody on March 24th.
That sounds fantastic. For everything else you're looking for, check out frogpants.com, including my brand new webcomic, Fred and Can. It's in its third edition and a fourth on its way. I hope people are enjoying it. I'm enjoying making it. And go check it out if you haven't seen it before. It's over at fredcancomic.com or at frogpants.com. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, for all of you. We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Yes.
We did it.